Hi, welcome back. I'm Dara Kennedy. When Denise Merrill looks back at her career, she recalls to us in this Monday conversation that her drive to be a leader began back in her high school days. She has served under five governors, has advocated for women in politics, and fought for the voters of Connecticut and those away from the state lately, but says this past election year was a battle unlike anything she's ever faced.
I'm Maya Schwader, and it was a battle she definitely won. Because of her and her team's efforts, a record 1.86 million Bridge Staters voted in the 2020 presidential election. That's nearly 80% of registered voters in Connecticut, according to The Day. We're going to dive into how Merrill made that happen, as well as many of the other battles she had to face in her three terms as Connecticut's Secretary of State. Of course, seeing a storied politician like Denise Merrill retire is always a bit bittersweet. We started by asking her, why did she feel that now was the right time for her to step away?
30 years is an awfully long time. I never thought I'd be in elected office for 30 years. I didn't think I'd be in office for 10 years. But, you know, life kind of moves on and you keep moving up the food chain. And, you know, I just kept running for office and having some success at it. But, you know, the last 10 years have been certainly interesting. These are borrowed jobs, as I like to say. I don't think people should stay in the same office forever. I think we need new blood, new ideas occasionally. And there's lots of other ways I feel like I can make a contribution. And, you know, running elections is grueling. Not that I'm known for being pretty energetic, let's put it that way. But, you know, it takes your life away. It takes a long periods of your life away where you're out every single night. And I no longer have children at home, which is great, but I have grandchildren I'd like to see. I have a lot of other things I'd like to do as well. And I feel like I've made a real contribution. And sometimes you know when that moment is, when you say, okay, I've done the things I wanted to do and taken it as far as I think I can take it. And you know, I'm ready to do some other things.
You served three terms now as Connecticut's Secretary of State. It was reported that you considered stepping back after two terms. What made you stay that time?
You know, at that point, I was still, you know, kind of pondering whether I wanted to do that. There were some other offers of things to do more nationally at the time. But I decided to stay because I still had a lot of unfinished business, honestly. And then, of course, I had no way of knowing what would happen during these past 4 years. I mean, 2016, I became president of the National Association of Secretaries. And of course, the 2016 election was nothing like what any of us ever imagined. And it has been like that ever since. And I feel like this office is in a spotlight that it was never in before. And so it felt very important for me to stay in this position, especially during the crises that elections have endured.
Speaking of the crises, would you say that that was your most challenging time in all of your years in politics?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think it's over by any means. And I think that's the one thing that does give me pause about stepping aside right now, even here in Connecticut, where I think we have a pretty settled system of elections. I don't feel we are under threat as many of my colleagues are in other states. But, you know, there are rumblings even here. People have absorbed a lot of the misinformation, disinformation, and downright lies that have been spread over the last 4 years in particular about our elections. And this is a period of profound mistrust. And that will do us in the end, unless we can manage to restore people's faith. And it's very difficult under the onslaught of misinformation on social media. So that is what does give me pause. I'm not sure what's going to happen with it. I don't have any particularly good answers on any of it. But we have to keep trying. And I do think another generation has to recommit itself to these democratic principles that we have all sustained and believed in for literally hundreds of years. So that's one of the reasons I want to see some new people stepping in here, because I think there are some great ideas out there, great young people that can do this job. And so that's what I want to see.
Denise, you just mentioned about misinformation and disinformation. Huge points of contention in the last election. As Secretary of State, you had to help manage how voters would receive that misinformation and still help them get to the ballot box in a pandemic. Can you just walk us through what that was like?
In Connecticut, we had a special problem. You know, you think of these kind of suppressive laws being mostly in the South and the Midwest. Connecticut actually has some of the most restrictive laws in the country about, we have no early voting, that is days of voting before election day. And we have very restrictive access to absentee ballots. And that's because they are embedded in our state constitution, which makes it very, very difficult to change. I think that's the only reason it's still there. You know, they call Connecticut the land of steady habits, and not for nothing, it's kind of true. But I do think we would have made more progress on access to the ballot before now, if it weren't for the fact that it's so difficult to change. So we had to confront that square on during COVID. COVID was the greatest challenge I can possibly imagine to being able to get everyone access to the ballot. So we had to reinvent our election system almost out of whole cloth within a month or two. Great challenge, especially in Connecticut, where we have no counties in Connecticut. So we just have 169 little towns all trying to hold an election under very difficult circumstances. So we did manage. We had the most successful election ever, ironically.
You're listening to And Another Thing. Our Monday conversation today is with Connecticut Secretary of State Denise Merrill. We continued our chat by asking how she and her team started tackling the challenge that was the 2020 presidential election.
We really started planning, believe it or not, in February of 2020. We got the drift of this early on. And in a typical election in Connecticut, about 4% of people cast absentee ballots. And as I say, we have no days of early voting. Almost every other state now has some other day that you can either come in person and vote or cast an absentee ballot. So that was what we had to reinvent, because we knew that lots and lots of people were not going to be able to go to the polls. And they were frantic about it. I was getting hundreds of emails and calls and texts, every kind of message saying, what can I do? I cannot give up my vote, especially in this important election. You know, what are you going to do about it? And so I went to the governor. He and I sat down early on in March and said, we've got to have an executive order that allows people to cast absentee ballots in this special emergency situation. And we had to do it in a way that was still within the constitutional boundaries of what was required. So one of the exceptions that you have to have in order to get an absentee ballot under our state constitution is you have to be sick. And the way it's said in the constitution, it says you have to be unable to get to the polls due to sickness. Well, we've got a lot of lawyers in my office, and I'm one of them. And we had to kind of, under the circumstance of COVID, in this very narrow emergency situation, the governor crafted an executive order that said everyone would be able to get an absentee ballot under these circumstances only. And that's what we did. It was challenged in court. That was the pushback. And we won. Then we had to put something in place in offices all over the state that were not equipped for this. I mean, they were no way equipped to handle the, we ended up with 650,000 absentee ballots. So we had to get funding to the town so they could hire extra help in the clerk's offices. We did mail out applications for the absentee ballots so that that would take that burden off the towns. We definitely got pushback on that, as you've heard around the country, with people saying how you cannot have the authority to mail applications for absentee ballots to everyone in the state. Well, actually, we do. So we did it. I'm glad we did it, because it made people understand that they could get an absentee ballot. So that was a big challenge, because that was all new and people were getting these applications in the mail and, you know, what is this thing I'm getting from the government and how do I do this? So we set up a whole call center so we could manage all this. We sent lots of help to the towns. 10,000 people volunteered to help out in the elections. And then we had to explain to people how to use all this. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the public information campaign may have been the most important thing we did. But you can tell, I mean, it was a huge job to accomplish all this, especially with so many small towns and local officials who had never done this before. You can just imagine the kind of communication we needed and lots of concern from everyone involved. So I am proud we got through it. We got through it amazingly well. More people were able to vote in this election than ever in Connecticut history. More people registered to vote than ever in Connecticut history. So in the end, it was successful, but it was an enormous task.
Our Monday conversation with Connecticut Secretary of State Denise Merrill continues after the break. She explains that the use of so much technology in politics has not exactly eased the process. Stay with us.
A 100 years ago this month, a woman named Sadie Alexander became the first Black American to get a PhD in economics. Things, however, did not quite go according to plan from there.
No one hired her into a position as an economist. She eventually became a lawyer.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Sadie Alexander's legacy next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace is coming up at 6:30, followed by Fresh Air at 7 and Jazz a la Mode at 8 on New England Public Media. Partly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Continued humid with a low around 70. Mostly sunny, hot and humid tomorrow with a chance of showers. Highs in the upper 90s and heat index values as high as 106. And mostly sunny, hot and continued humid on Wednesday with a 50% chance of showers. Highs again in the upper 90s. This is New England Public Media.
You're listening to And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy. After turmoil and bloodshed from marchers led by John Lewis was captured on national television in 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson signed into law a bill that would prohibit racism in voting on the state and local levels. While it was a celebratory moment, the future would produce a multitude of questionable moments at the polls. We asked Secretary Merrill if, when she began her career, she could have envisioned Americans having so little faith in the voting system.
Never. You know, you remember, it was a settled question in this country ever since really 1965. And yes, I was around. I was in high school in 1965. And I do remember the Voting Rights Act. And everybody was like, yay, now finally everyone can vote. And that was it pretty much for, 50 years almost. And it really only started cropping up in, I would say, 2008 to 2010. Not an accident. President Obama, I'm sure, had something to do with all this in the election of 2010. I went to my first national meeting in 2011, February, and I went to a meeting that was supposed to be about great civic engagement and civic education, which are my real interests. And I thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to get all these ideas on how to get people involved. The first thing that happened is this guy, Chris Kobach, who was then Secretary of State in Kansas, stood up and started talking about all the voter fraud he was rooting out in Canvas. And he was hoping to get prosecutorial power to be able to make it into a crime. And, you know, I was totally shocked. I remember thinking, what is this all about? This is not what I signed up for. And he was talking about the need for photo IDs to make sure that the undocumented aliens were not voting. And it was totally shocking to me. And that was 2011. So it's a very new thing. Really, the last decade is when this has all erupted.
Your career has spanned since the early 90s. And as the Connecticut Mirror mentioned, it's been a volatile period of U.S. history. Do you agree with that?
Well, I have to say the 90s were not volatile in the way that people think about it today. I would say, in fact, politics in the 90s was very collaborative. And that's what I miss the most. I always tell people from when I came into office, statewide office in 93, right through early 2000s. We used to lunch with Republicans, have drinks with Republicans, talk to them all the time, collaborate on legislation. There were not these deep divisions you're seeing now. I'm not sure why. I've done a lot of thinking about this and actually been to several national gatherings where people are pondering all this with big time pollsters and people like that. And the only thing I can come up with is we just don't see each other anymore. We used to know each other personally. We knew each other's families. We would actually go visit people from other parties in their districts. We would hang out together. None of that is happening. In the early 90s, there were no TVs in the chambers, for example, and there were no computers at the desks. So the advent of technology, I think, has changed a lot, and not in a good way. And these culture wars are going on everywhere. It's a terrible change from the old days. And some of us still talk about how can we get that back? I'm not sure we can. I don't know.
Politics are also now run on social media. When you say it's time for fresh ideas, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think technology is something that has to be reckoned with, and especially in elections, but also in all phases of government. We're trying to catch up. In many ways, government is seen as kind of clunky and not able to fulfill the duties that it has to the citizens, but especially in elections being so fraught. There's probably going to be new technologies brought to bear on some of this. Now, I'm not sure that's going to completely solve the problem, honestly, because there are some underlying cultural issues being played out here. But I think it's interesting that Joe Manchin at the national level came out with the kind of compromise idea about election reform. And he said, well, let's just put in photo ID. Now, this is anathema to Democrats and supposedly a big issue for Republicans. Well, it was quite interesting that that was not seen as an acceptable compromise to the Republicans. So I'm not sure that's really the issue. I don't know, but I think there will be new technologies that will help us at least get the trust of the public back. Maybe it'll be eyeball scans as you come in to vote. I don't know.
If you're just joining us, our Monday conversation today is with Connecticut Secretary of State Denise Merrill. We continued our talk touching on how the internet has changed politics.
I think there's going to be more attention paid to what we call digital literacy. I would like to see there be. Young people actually are much more flexible in this regard. And I'm always impressed when I talk to young people about their ideas about how things should be. And they're much more accepting of other people. They are much more accepting of new ideas. And I think that's probably what's needed here, because they're the ones that are having to grapple with this whole new world where you don't have any idea who's putting these ideas out there. You know, we know from the inside, because I'm on this National Cybersecurity Committee, a lot of these things are being promulgated by foreign countries that are trying to mess with us. They're trying to hack our minds, if you will, not our technology. And a lot of these the websites are fake websites. We know that, but it doesn't help to just know that, because people are out there reading these things and they're just remarkably trusting of what they're reading on the internet.
When you step down, how many women will be left on the executive level in the state of Connecticut?
Well, it's an interesting question. That would just be Susan Bisewitz, who is the former Secretary of State, now the Lieutenant Governor. And at our constitutional level, that's the only other female. So yes, it is still a problem. Absolutely. All my career, I have worked on trying to get more women to run for office. Right. Starting with, I was on the initial board of something called the Women's Campaign School at Yale, which is a training institute for women in politics, both parties. And I also helped initiate Emerge, which is a training program specifically for Democratic women in that case. And others. I have mentored literally hundreds of young women who have come through my office. All of them I encourage to run for office. And it's a hard thing for women. And the Women's Campaign School, for example, literally is nuts and bolts. It teaches you how to raise money. It teaches you how to present yourself publicly. And it teaches you to think of yourself in these roles. And I think that's the most important law rule of thumb, which is, you know, you've got to have the confidence to go out there and do these things. And it's just not the case. I mean, men think nothing of just going right into it, you know, and they don't think they have to have any experience in anything. It's really striking when you start talking to women about this. They're very hesitant to put themselves out there.
Where did you find the confidence when you first started out?
You know, it's a great question. I've asked myself that a lot of times, and we've done a lot of work on this, a research on this. The first thing is you have to be asked by somebody. And I have to say, someone did ask me to join a school board in that case. I kind of credit two things. Well, there was my mother, of course. Everybody always says, happens to be true in my case. My mother was like my biggest cheerleader all my life. I also went to an all-girls high school. Girls are president of the class. Girls are head of the sports teams. Girls are in charge of everything. And it does give you a different vision, I think, of who you are. I do credit them with giving me some leadership skills.
Connecticut, on the executive level, it's quite diverse. You have an African-American male as state treasurer and Sean Wooden. You've got A.G. Tong, Asian-American. You, as secretary of state. Where do the women of color start to come in to the executive level in Connecticut?
Oh, I think they're right on the cusp, actually. And I think that has been decades of work on many people's part trying to get them involved. And I would say Emerge and Yale Women's Campaign School are two examples where we deliberately went out and recruited women of color. And that's an even harder sell. I mean, the surveys I've seen and the studies we've done of this is that, for example, women, as opposed to men, have to be asked an average of 7 times before they will actually run for office. For women of color, it's twice that. Connecticut have a whole cadre of women who are in the legislature, who are members of various grassroots groups, which have been very instrumental in mentoring women of color in particular. And I think it's starting to bear fruit, and they are very powerful ladies.
How does your family feel now that you're stepping away?
Oh, I think they're, you know, it's interesting. They have mixed feelings. My husband is the only one who's still home. And I asked him, I said, so are you feeling good? Isn't this great? He's like, yeah, if it's what you want. I was sort of surprised he wasn't more enthusiastic. And I said, hey, can I have a little enthusiasm here? I'm going to be right here. We're going to be able to do all these things. And he said, yeah, you're going to be kind of underfoot. So, of course, my family has been tremendously supportive. My 3 grandchildren, I'll have more time to see them. And I think they're actually thrilled.
Madam Secretary, thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Our thanks to Connecticut Secretary of State Denise Merrill for joining our Monday conversation. I'm Dara Kennedy. Thanks for listening.
We are at Hello and Another on social media, and you can also email us at andanotherthing@nepm.org. I'm Maya Schwader. We'll see you tomorrow.